This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
This is Behind the Rose, where Bachelor Nation meets country music and everything in between. Here's your host, Blake Horstman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Behind the Rose podcast. I'm your host, Blake Horstman, here with my buddy, as usual, Eric Bradley. And today we have our good friend, Russell Dickerson. Thanks for coming on, Russell. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Let's go. Absolutely.
We were just talking. Last time we saw you was Atlantic City.
Atlantic City, opening night, King Brown tour.
Yeah. How many more shows did you even do after that before everything got closed down? I feel like it couldn't have been much.
Four.
That's it.
Yeah. So we literally had five shows of the entire tour, and then it was like, nope.
Wow.
Yeah. Cause that was the night of my birthday. Cause I was the 28th and March 1st going into the first.
Yeah.
That's right. Right,
and then we shut down the 13th.
Mm-hmm. So what were those conversations like? Did you guys think that you'd be a couple months, like a couple weeks? Like what was that like? Yeah.
Yeah. The first one was like, well, cause we had a week off tour, and then it was like, oh yeah, dude, we'll be, and then found out the next weekend was canceled. And we're like, all right, you know, we get it, you know, let everything kind of settle down. We'll be out there by like maybe April, you know what I mean? And then it was like, no, it's going to be June. And it's like, no, July. And now, you know, here we are.
Yeah.
Year's over.
You know, like, yeah. Exactly. It's like,
golly.
What are we, 9 months in now? God.
I know. Yeah.
The year's over, but it's been a tremendous 2020 for you.
Yeah, it turned out.
Obviously, congrats on the 2 week number one, the new album, but most of all, the birth of Remington.
Oh, my dude.
Yeah,
man. So like, you know, all that said, I haven't been home this much since 2015, maybe 2016. Just going all out, 120 miles an hour, and man, this time has been just the biggest blessing. Because we were supposed to go on tour 2 weeks after Remington was born. Wow. So, like, because for us at the time, we were like, dude, we get 2 weeks off. Let's go. Like, that was like the biggest deal ever. But, I mean, to be home 100% of the time is amazing.
Yeah, there's like little blessings in this, you know, the whole quarantine, if you will, because I think a lot of musicians and a lot of live entertainers have like I said, haven't been home this long, and you know, some of them in decades. So it's kind of a blessing in disguise. And you having a newborn, that's got to be pretty cool to hang out with the family and actually get to like see her. I mean, like it could be another 3 to 4 months. Like who knows? You know?
Yeah.
It's wild. It's wild.
Yeah.
Legit Zaddy gang now.
Zaddies are for real now.
You bring it back. The white New Balance is legit now. Walking with that stroller.
Dude, that's my dream. Just like walking up into Whole Foods or whatever. Just pushing a stroller, wearing Nike Monarchs. That's my ultimate dream come true.
Dude, one of my favorite things is seeing like dads with like the baby and like the carriage on their chest. Yes. Just, you know, just walking around like in grocery stores.
That's literally my every morning. Like I'll take Remington and let Kaylee sleep a little more. And so I literally strap them on my chest, make coffee, make breakfast, you know.
I'll say, what do you think's changed the most? In your life, obviously, I mean, other than quarantine, but like, what do you think's changed the most since Remington's been born? Is it just kind of like sleep? I know that you probably don't get much sleep.
Sleep, like one of the like physical things, but I think my mindset of just like, I don't know, of like kind of get your crap together, kind of, you know, like he, like this dude's going to be talking like me and walking like me real soon.
Yeah.
So, but also it's just like, appreciating every second of life at this point. It's like obviously him, and like I had to get up this morning at like 2:30 because he was just like crying, so I had to pick him up and rock him. But it's like those moments where you just gotta like stop and be like, man, I got a human being in my arms right now.
Exactly.
That we made and like I don't know, it's just there was, I don't know if y'all know Adam Hambrick, this is so random. Mm-hmm. But he has this song called Rockin' All Night Long. And it's like, dude, I was listening to it yesterday and I was just like wrecked. It talks about at first, like we're young and free, drinking, rocking all night long. Second verse is get married, honeymoon, we're rocking all night long. And then the third verse is like, got a room decorated in pink, sitting in a rocking chair, bloodshot eyes, rocking all night long. And it's just like,
that's good. It gives me goosebumps, man.
I know. I got rocked, but anyways, so that's pretty much sums up my life. right now.
I like that. It's such a good point, because I think that's like the moment, like when I have like a child, is where I'm like, okay, get your shit together. Like, you're literally responsible for another human being, you know, like you can't fuck this up. So right. You got to do this, you know? So that's gotta be a pretty wild feeling. Sure, man. Like,
yeah. It definitely, it definitely is a quick realization of like getting your shit together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's gotta be. And then obviously 2020, you just came out with your second album, Southern Symphony, man. Congrats.
Yes, dude. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been a long time coming. It's been 3 years since I put out an album.
So have you been kind of, has this been something you've been working on for a really long time, or did it kind of come together in quarantine? Like, how did that look? Because I know a lot of people have been writing a lot of music in quarantine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've kind of been the opposite, man. These songs kind of, I wrote these songs on tour with Lady Antebellum. Like, I wrote a lot of these songs on the road. So that was the end of 2018 that I wrote, like, Love You Like I Used To, Home Sweet. I wrote Home Sweet with Charles Kelly from Lady A. So like, we were just on our bus writing. And so it all kind of came together pre-quarantine. And quarantine was when I like, we had all of the recordings. So we really got to dive in and like tweak stuff that I wouldn't have had time to do if it wasn't for quarantine. So I really got to dive deep on this record and figure out like, you know, how I wanted it to sound more like me. How did I want it to make it sound different? How did I want it to make it just 100% Russell Dickerson. Yeah. So that's what was really cool about this record.
Were there any major changes you made, you know, through quarantine or, you know, that kind of thing? Or was it more like you just like the order of the songs on the album, that kind of thing? Like what?
Yeah. So, I mean, sonically, like you kind of get to dig through the tracks, and because when you record just like way too much stuff. Like you
right,
just,
rough course, yeah.
Just, I mean, just hundreds of tracks of everything. So then you kind of like weed stuff out. Because Home Sweet, which is my next single, it was like, it like wasn't there. Like it wasn't happening. And so I called my producer. I was like, dude, I love this song so much. It means so much to me. It's about me and my wife being broke as soon as we get back from our honeymoon and having a baby. And like I want this to be a single, but this song does not sound like a single right now. So like, just, I mean, that's just an example. We got to like go back to the drawing board and like just kind of strip all the junk away and just let this song come up to be what it is now.
Yeah.
And so that's just kind of what that process is. Yeah.
If somebody was to ask you what this album meant, like what was the theme, I guess, of this album, what would you say it is? You know, what does the whole album mean to you?
Man, this album is kind of like yours, for example. My first album was like kind of a wedding. Well, yours is like a wedding song, but like that is kind of like a love letter to my wife. It's a lot of love songs in there. And this one is more like going all the way back from my childhood and telling like the title track, Southern Symphony, is about going back to my childhood and all the memories that I have of being raised in a little cornfield and tobacco town and all that stuff. And all the sounds of my childhood come together to make a Southern Symphony. It's kind of the spiel of that song. So it goes all the way back from childhood to having a baby. Okay. So this is like a whole lifespan of an album in 10 songs.
I love your music. I'm a big fan of you. I think that you've kind of broke the mold in country music. I think you're not afraid to like kind of do something different. Who would you consider your biggest musical influences?
I mean, I mentioned it in Southern Symphony. The song is Garth Brooks. It's like that not only his stage presence, like that's what it draws you to him. And that's where I get a lot of influence. I'm like, when I get on stage, bro, I'm going so hard. Just you like, you have to. You have, like, I'm,
it's
here
R&D
to make
a party.
That's right, dude. We throw a party. Yeah. And so I definitely get that from Garth Brooks. And also, man, just his song. Every song is so, like, intentional and legendary. Like, every one of his songs on his albums are evergreen. Like, even, obviously, Friends in Love Places, like, one of the biggest songs of all time.
Yeah.
Just that song and, like, I don't know. It just like, I don't want to waste music. Like when I release music, I want it to last for decades and decades.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've seen you a couple times and your stage presence, like you do go hard, man. It is a party out there. It's fun, man.
Yeah.
It's really fun. Yeah.
Yes, dude.
Did you always want to be a musician? Was this like something you wanted to do since you were a kid kind of thing? Or did you kind of fall into it?
It kind of came about once I like started playing music. I mean, I took piano lessons all growing up, super musical family. But when I got a guitar, and then me and my buddies got together and started like jamming together. And like, we started a band. It was like, just like a heavy rock, just screaming, just teen angst band. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Just, you know what I'm saying? And so,
I'm not gonna lie.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like Under Oath and August Burns Red. Like we were just like, let's pick it go. And so we that was like where I was like, started getting that where music like hyped me up, because before that it was just like church hymns and like choir songs, which I mean, you know, if you can turn up for those if you want, but it was like, yeah. that's when I started like feeling music. And then we'd go to Under Oath shows, and we'd go to like all these rock shows and see the bands and the dudes on stage. And I was like, holy crap, this energy, this like, whatever's in this room is what I want to do. Like, I want to be that dude on stage. And so kind of like probably 16, like when we were able to drive and just drive downtown and see all these bands, was when I got hooked on like performing. And then I was like, well, if I'm going to perform, I got to have songs to perform. So that's when I started writing my own songs, and it just kind of started snowballing from there.
Wow. So 16, you basically started songwriting.
Yeah. I mean, we wrote like as a band. Yeah. That's where it like started creating, you know, the art of music. It's like no boundaries, no rules. We were just jamming. And then like, I think when I got to college, when I got to Belmont is when I really was like, all right, like that's fun and cool, but like, I want to do this for real. And that's when I kind of shifted back to country music. Cause I was raised on country music. Like
gotcha. Okay.
First time performing in front of people ever was Garth Brooks and like the little talent show thing. Oh. So like I went when I started getting serious about making this a career is when I went like, when I was like, all right, like I'm going back to my roots here.
So do you remember like your first big break? Cause everybody's kind of got that big break story. Do you remember yours?
Nah, man, it's been, I don't know. For me, I feel like it's been like a bunch of little breaks.
Really?
Like in college before, like me and Florida Georgia Line met, they didn't have a band name. They were just songwriters, really.
Yeah.
And so I remember I got a publishing deal offer, which is like a songwriting deal. I got an offer before they did. And so that was like a little break there.
Yeah.
And then I really, when the Yours music video, that was like the first, when the Yours music video came out, my wife shot it for like literally nothing, like gas money. And so once that hit, it was like, it came out and they were like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a wedding song. I don't know. And that was not our intention at all. But then we took that to Sirius XM and they were like, yes, like they just got the vision. And then from there, that's how I ended up getting a record deal was, you know, I had already sold like 150,000 singles before we even signed a record deal. And so that, you know, that led to a record deal, and then record deal led to country radio, and then, you know, first number one.
Yeah.
The rest is history, dude. Yeah.
This was your fourth number one, right?
Yeah. Love You Like I Used To was just my fourth.
That's incredible, man.
Yeah, man. That's impressive, man.
And it's not, it's like the four number ones is like, that's a career accomplishment by any means. But the crazy thing is it's the first four singles ever. You know what I mean? So like there was a billboard quote, and there's only four people to release four singles in a row number one. So it's Brooks and Dunn, Florida Georgia Line, Luke Combs, and now me.
Wow.
So like, dude, that's got
a great company.
That is, yeah.
And so that stat was just like, damn, I think this is finally working. You know what I mean?
I would say so.
Yeah. Now they're just going to keep coming easier and easier.
I hope so, man. I hope.
So I was just thinking, like, I feel like you're just getting started, man. Like, I feel like, you know, like,
yeah, especially that's what's crazy. Because it's just your second album.
Yeah.
So
Like some of those guys you just mentioned have like been around for a long time and they've had a lot of different albums, you know?
Seriously.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy. I want to talk a little bit more about, you were about to sing Yours. You talked about your wife. And if I remember, because she was like driving your van, right? Like back in the day, like to gigs and everything. And she's like been there through thick and thin for you. And she recorded that music video. Like, how did that play out? Like, what was that like?
Dude, I mean, well, first of all, yeah, she's been like my sidekick right here. Like, man, she's in like business meetings with me, because she doesn't take crap worth it. She does not, dude. Like percentages and stuff. Like, she's like, no, like we want more percentage. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, she's rough.
Yeah.
And so she's been my girl. Like, she's been there. She drove the van back in the day. Like, she would drive from like 2 a.m. because we would just get off stage. We're exhausted, you know, drinking a little bit. Nobody can drive.
Of course, yeah.
So she was like, all right, well, I'll take the 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. shift. And man, she was there. She just wanted to be together, and with whatever that looked like, she wanted to be there. And she, you know, she's an incredible creative eye. Obviously, she shot the Yours music video, directed the Blue Tacoma video, just directed the Love You Like I Used To video. And so, like, it's not like she's like a charity case just to be there. Like,
so carrying her,
yeah. Like, my brand and my imaging and everything would not be, 100%. It would not be what it is without her.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. Yeah. Ride or die. You know, I love that.
Yeah. We were talking about that. Like, every time I think we've ever seen you, you guys are always together. Like, she's always by your side.
Yeah.
So she definitely is your ride or die.
She really is, man. And she was raised with 5 older brothers who played travel soccer. So like, her childhood was in a van driving around the country with 5 dudes. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, she was literally bred for this.
Born for this.
Yes.
You and your wife, big fans of the show, the Bachelor shows. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Have you been watching this season?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. This,
the most dramatic season yet.
Right.
Love it.
Well, we've gotten 2 most dramatic seasons this year.
I know. So. Yeah. And I think this time Chris Harrison is actually right. This is a pretty dramatic season.
This is, and I feel like you're right. He says this every season, but this season, I feel like he might be right. Yeah. Not only with COVID, it would have been strange and different, but now 2 bachelorettes and everything. It's crazy. Yeah. So who do you think right now Tayshia is going to end up with?
I feel like Brendan, he was starting to pull ahead for a little bit. And then I got to pull up. Sorry.
I know. We always kind of forget.
Yeah. Kale sent me a cheat sheet and of all. There's still like 10 dudes left, right?
Yeah. I think.
And there's only like 4. But like, kind of in the running, I think.
This next episode, it cuts to the final 4, the hometown.
Brendan and Ben's up there.
Yep.
Then Zach C.
Yeah. Yep.
No, those are actually ours too. That we're like,
Those are top 3.
Yeah, those are my those are my top 3 right now.
Yeah.
She's clearly got a good connection with all. I think she might fall for multiple guys, which is going to make a pretty crazy ending. I think.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Yeah, I think the relating on the not just the divorce, but when Zach opened up about, you know, his drug abuse and all that stuff, and how he's now like on the board of the whole thing. I think that was. I feel like she's a sucker for anybody who just opens up and is super vulnerable, and that means a lot to her. I don't know.
And she's got a lot of guys this season that have opened up and been super vulnerable with her.
Yeah. Like that art date was like just like knocked down any and every wall, emotional wall that these dudes build up.
It's a wild date, man. Like every single one, I was like, Jesus, like holy cow.
Yeah.
These guys have some stories, man. How long have you been watching the show? Like, do you remember like your first season, you know, way back?
Oh, I'm trying to think who was before, because I mean JoJo wasn't that long ago.
I mean, kind of now though. Now it's like 5. I want to say 5 years maybe.
Yeah, because was right after Ben, and Ben. That was 5 years.
It was a few seasons before that, because like once we got married was when obviously we started watching it together all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, Catherine and
John Lowe. Yeah,
Sean.
Okay.
That's my earliest memory.
That's a good season too. They're still together, kids, the whole 9, man.
Yeah, man. So
the
good.
So the show works.
The show works. Every once in a while, man. Every once in a while.
1 out of 10.
Yeah. I love when their husbands will own up to it and be like, hell yeah, I watch it and I love it. Like, I'm into it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's
great. Have you ever performed during the show?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was on Rachel's season.
Okay.
So it was a Rachel and Deanie baby date. Deanie babies. So that was early on too. Like my single had just gone to radio and yours. And so we went, it was in South Carolina, I think. And my record label paid for a tour bus. Like we piled some friends on there, the band, everybody was like, dude, we're going to play Bachelorette. Freaking go. So piled on this tour bus. And drove to South Carolina, and it was such a fun memory.
Yeah.
I think we played like 6 hours later than we were supposed to. You know, yeah, you know how it goes.
Oh yeah. Hurry up and wait. Yeah. That's how TV is, man. Hurry up and wait.
But like one of my favorite memories of that day was so we were sound check, everything was set up on stage, and we're obviously just waiting around for all the shots and everybody get, you know, whatever they need, waiting for Rachel and Dean to show up. So Chris Harrison just like walks up on our bus. And we start passing around a little Maker's Mark and hanging out, loosening up a little bit. And so all of a sudden, Chris Harrison's like, all right, you and me are going on stage. Let's hype this crowd up. And I was like, I have no idea what's about to happen. And he's just like, grab your guitar. Let's go. And so I just took me and my guitar and Chris Harrison go out there. And we start playing like just all like bar country covers, like Friends in Low Places and a Wagon Wheel, all this stuff, and just me and Chris Harrison just vibing on stage, getting this crowd hyped up, dude. It was such a cool story. Just he was just like, let's just go out there and hype this crowd up. So
that's one of my favorite Chris Harrison stories. I'm like, I've heard a lot, but that's pretty cool.
It humanizes him quite a bit.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's great. Yeah.
Y'all probably know him way more than I do, but he seems like just a normal dude.
He is a guy that I would want to pass Maker's Mark with. Like, I feel like he's just that kind of guy, you know?
Right,
like,
exactly.
Yeah, totally. I've had some beers with him and everything. So that's a cool story, man. And are you able to, when you're like, you know, doing, you know, performing and everything on the show, were you watching Rachel and Dean? Were you like, okay, there's a little something there? Were you like, they don't even like each other. Like, they're just dancing. I'm like, how is that, man? Like, like throw Dean under the bus here. Like, he, you
know? I will say, bro, they like, as soon as they got like to the little square in the middle, they were like in the middle of a crowd. And as soon as they got to that square, dude, they were just like making out and dancing the entire time. Wow. And we did it like we had to do the song like four times.
Yeah.
And they were just making out and dancing. I think they were feeling it.
Not many people know you have to like play this song like multiple times, you know, while they're just sitting there dancing. You just keep seeing
exactly. Dance, like, and the last one has to be just as exciting as the first one. And
if not more, they're like, hype up more, you know, like crowd, get louder.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we always like to finish off the show with kind of what you want your legacy to be, whether it be in life, in music, whatever it was, like, what do you want your legacy to be as an artist?
Just that when my name is mentioned, I want people to just to think of, you know, just a genuine storyteller artist of who writes real life songs, who is, you know, I want to be one of the greatest performers in the music business, but also I want to be remembered as a good husband, a good father, and who prioritized that above, you know, everything professional.
Oh yeah, man. That was the right answer.
Also, before we leave, cause obviously, you know, we kind of have a little partnership with the Grizzly Rose with this, and that's a place where you've played quite a few times.
Man,
if you have any like memories or like, what's your favorite memory of playing the world famous Honky Tonk?
Oh man, this Grizzly Rose is one of my favorite venues in America, just for the reason that, like, you know, you go around, but I got so many stories. So this is the reason why, is because like early on, like starting out touring, like you don't sell a lot of tickets. Nobody really knows who you are. You'll play here, you'll play there. And they'll be like, basically the shitty shows start to diminish and then the good ones start to, you know, it's like 1 out of 10 shows is like, oh, decent. Mm-hmm. So then you got to play 9 more just crappy bars that were whatever. And so we're just like, oh my God, it's just getting worse and worse. And so we get to the Grizzly Rose. We find out that we're like 100 tickets away from selling it out. And it's just like, we're like all freaking out. We're like, dude, this is exactly what we needed. We're like, cause we drove from Nashville. And so like we had made our way out to Denver. And so it's just like, we're like, holy crap, dude, this place is about to be packed. And sure enough, dude, one of the best shows, I will always remember one of the best shows ever. I mean, they knew the words to all my old songs, the new ones that probably weren't even released yet. And it just like, I think I crowd surfed that night. Like sometimes you just get so hype, I just can't contain myself. And so that was that night. And it was just like our spirits were like, dude, it's starting to happen. Like we're really doing it, man. And then we drive to Cheyenne and we show up and we're like, dude, last night was amazing. Like it's gotta be like, we're about to have 2 in a row. And we go in, dude, they literally don't even have a sound system set up up for us. Like we had to use the opening band's like PA. And I think there was like 6 to 7 people there that actually were like listening to the music. You know what I mean? So to go from like 1,000 people screaming these words to like 14 people in a smoky casino bar that could not give a frick, dude. So that's one of like my first Grizzly Rose stories. And when you play the Grizzly Rose, if you sell it out, you get a belt buckle.
Yeah, I was going to ask how many you have.
Yeah, I was going to say. See
if I have it, because that's one of my like favorite. I don't know if I can find it, but anyways, so I think it was the next time we came back, we didn't sell it out. And then it was like, oh, dude, it was like so close. Like I almost bought the rest of the tickets.
Yeah, exactly.
but that's not fun knowing that. Yeah, yeah. So, but then the third time when we came back, they were like, we got a surprise for you. And dude, just to get that belt buckle, man, was like, I love that they do that. Cause I'll keep that forever.
Yeah. No,
that's and if you play back to back nights and sell it out twice, you get like a black, like all black. No buckle.
All right.
So there's two different ones. So you got to go for that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I feel like you're getting.
Well, I think you're there now.
I think you're there. I think you can sell out like a fucking 5 days. Yeah. Ago, yeah. Yeah. For sure, man. But Chris Rose always shows out.
Yeah. They always show mad love to the artist.
And that's, you know, that's just, I just love, that's why I love the Grizzly Rose, man. Everybody knows no matter what, when you go there, it's just going to be best night ever.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Man. It's a real family there too. Like,
really.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you. Where can people find you? I know obviously Instagram, but you also have YouTube.
YouTube. I think it's Russell D TV. We do a behind the scenes series called This Is Russ. And I just act stupid and take people a day in the life, you know?
Yep. That's great. And then you're just Russell Dickerson on Instagram, right?
Yeah, it's Russell. Like RUSSELLED. Gotcha. Getting Russell.
Go check him out on Instagram, YouTube. Go check out his new album, Southern Symphony. Appreciate you. Like I said, just getting started. I can't wait to come and see you soon, man.
Yeah, I know. Can't wait to get back to shows, have you boys out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we need an RD party.
I know.
ASAP. So, thanks. Immediately.
All right, boys. Appreciate you. Thanks for having me, man.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Be sure to follow our Instagram at Behind the Rose Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, comment, like, and give us all 5 of those damn stars. Behind the Rose is recorded on site at the world-famous Grizzly Rose or wherever we happen to be. See you next time, Behind the Rose.